10 minutes. If anyone else wants to join today, good way to start your Sunday. Get a hard day of learning it before you came to America. Sunday was no fly zone. Okay. Good morning, Matt. Okay, so we had spoken in the past about the lists of Talmidei Chachamim. Yochanan and Zakkai used to hand out nicknames to his Talmidim based on their styles of learning, who they were as people. And Avudah Nasi, the great Rebbe Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he would describe his peers. And we spoke last time about the difference between the Akiva and the Tarfon. Akiva was very organized, studied things with segmented form, had partitions, departmentalization, and the Tarfon was like a pile of stones. And he sensed the interconnectivity of Torah, even in areas that didn't seem as obviously connected. So having quoted these two lists, Avosif Nelson quotes a third list. And it's not by someone as well known as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai and Avudah Nasi. It's by an Amara named Isi ben Yehuda. Now, when we hear in the modern context someone named Isi or Izzy, we think it's a nickname for Yisrael. Yisrael. They call him Izzy. But in those days, very few people, it seems, were called Yisrael. We don't have any Rabbi Yisraels or Ben Yisraels in the Gemara. And what it really was is Isi was a nickname for Yosef. Yossi. We call him Yossi today, so they called him Yossi or Diossi. It was also Isi. So it was Isi ben Yehuda. He also was called by many, many different names. His father, evidently, Halalel, and two other names. But he was a person, interestingly enough, who was the second generation Amoras. He was right after Rav's generation. He moved from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, which is very uncommon. Most people move from Eretz Yisrael to Babel after the big move. The big move is Rav. When Rav moved to Babel, that was a trendsetter. A lot of people move because of things that Eretz Yisrael was so challenging and difficult. Isi ben Yehuda was read against the tide. He moved from Babel to Eretz Yisrael along with some other people. He was called Isi HaBavli or Yosef HaBavli. His Rebbe was a Belezer ben Shemua. And what's interesting about him is that his very famous song, two famous songs, the Talmidei Chachamim Shedivrei Torah Chaviven Aleihem, Ashrechem Yisrael Shedivrei Chachamim Ashrechem Talmidei Chachamim, as well as Mahafi Terosecha Kol Yom Nisichasi. The Gemara in Menachos and Daf Yuches cites these two statements having been said by Rav ben Shemua about Isi ben Yehuda. So every time you sing one of those songs, there's Isi ben Yehuda, who was like so impressive to his Rebbe, Rav ben Shemua, and he gave such great ideas in Torah. Rav ben Shemua said, Ashrechem Talmidei Chachamim Shedivrei Torah Chaviven Aleihem, Mahafi Terosecha Kol Yom Nisichasi. So that's what happened in Menachos Daf Yuches about Isi ben Yehuda. It's not as dominating as Rav and Shmuel, as Rav and Abayah, as Nachman of Sheshis, we call a minor on that. We don't have that many statements of his. Anyway, but interestingly enough, he listed various names for the Chachamim. This is the third list. List number one is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. List number two was Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. This is the third list. So let's see some of the lists that he made. Number one, so to make sure I have a few of them here, he called Rav Meir a Chacham and a Sofer. So first of all, it reminds us that Rav Meir was a writer. The Gemara says that the mayor once answered Rabbi Yishmael, the Gemara in Soka, he said, I'm a lavlar, I'm a sofer. And what's interesting is that the mayor was also known for being a very clear thinker and a very succinct speaker, which is why Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, when he built the Mishnah primarily on the mayor's statements, because they were so succinct and pithy and clear and lucid. And so whenever the Mishnah quotes a Shita, and Rabbi Meir doesn't tag it with Rabbi Meir, because 80%, 70% of the statements are Rabbi Meir's original statements. The Stamas Nisan Rabbi Meir, which reminds us about the relationship between clear thinking and writing. When you write, you have to clarify your thoughts. So I encourage a lot of boys when they're first starting to learn Lamdas, to learn through a Gemara, it's very confusing to them. Just write down flowcharts, models, diagrams, write down your Chidushim. And the opposite, of course, good writers are generally people that are clear thinkers. Generally, not always. So there's a real association between clear and powerful writing and clear-headed thinking, and evidently Rav Meir possessed both. Because his teachings weren't written down. When he taught Rav Shmuel, this is before Rav Yehuda HaNasi. Rav Meir was a Talmud of Rabbi Akiva. Who else is Rav Meir a Talmud of, famously, infamously? Lisha ben Avruya, the great heretic, Acher. And it was only someone of Rav Meir's personality that was able to separate the shell from the actual fruit, which people were very uncomfortable about this controversial decision to continue the learning by Moshe ben Avuya. Yet another, his Talmud was Rida Nasi, so Rabbi Meir is right between Rabbi Akiva and Rida Nasi. Another one of his Talmudim, which we'll meet in a few weeks, famously is someone named Simchas, is very, very capable of counterintuitive thinking. And probably one of his most counterintuitive ideas was that Tzora was paced Nezek Shalim as opposed to Chatzin Nezek, even though this is Halacha Moshe B'Sinai. So Simchas is a very interesting Talmud of Rabbi Meir. So this is Rabbi Meir, who Isi ben Yehuda called a Sofer and a Chacham. Those are the two traits he applied to Rabbi Meir. You're a Sofer and you're a Chacham. Now the next person he spoke about was Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda the Tana. Not Rabbi Yehuda, Chadash, Rabbi Yehuda, it was a Tana. And he would call Rabbi Yehuda, very interesting phrase, Chacham Lichasha Yirtzeh. You're smart when you want to be. It seems like a backhanded insult. Like telling a wide receiver, you score when you try. Maybe trade him to the Lions. You score when you try. So there are two ways to tackle this phrase or praise of Rabbi Yehuda. The simple approach is to suggest, and some have suggested this before, someone named Maharitz Chiyos, a very famous modern writer, that intellectual activity, as we know, and certainly in Torah, is not just based on how powerful your brain is and how strong your intellect, and also based on an emotional, psychological presence, a peace of mind, an inner tranquility, not being torn apart by strife or internal divisions. When the Rambam talks about lamdas in a very famous statement in which he values the importance of lamdas, he says the two criteria for being a big lamdan, I'm paraphrasing in the modern jargon, one is to have a broad sweep of information and ideas, that broad exposure, because lamdas is creativity, so that broad exposure to light, you can't be creative. Creativity is very hard to generate in a very narrowly defined field. But he also has yishuv hadas. Just to be calm, if you're at peace with yourself, just to be at peace with your world, your surroundings, your friends, your family, your spouse. I know personally, when I'm going to try not to be as best I can, but when I'm in a state of being disturbed emotionally, I'm not happy, there's an issue in my mind, weighing on my heart, it's very, very hard for me to be creative in learning. But when I'm generally at peace internally and things are calm, it's like a baseline for creativity, because creativity has to be contrasting. So you need a baseline of yourself to have a calm, and then to use that as much creativity is built on crisis and encounter, and certainly a lot of his different interactions in life and different places that he was. So the actual creative content could be based on conflict and interaction, but emotionally it's got to be an inner, almost like those of you who are in a rock band or a music band, if you play music instruments. So any music band is only as strong as the bass guitarist or the bass drummer. It's got to be a bass. So then someone's got to occupy that bass. It could be an organ, it could be a drummer, it could be a guitar. You have to just play the same rhythm again and again and again, and then all the other instruments play off of that rhythm and create interesting art or whatever, in this case, musical art. So evidently, Rabbi Yehuda had the capacity to put himself into that situation. It was a chacham l'chasha yirtzeh. He may have had moments in his life, like every human being, in which there was a bit of a emotional chaos or emotional imbalance in the long term, but lack of calm, and he was able to restore that when he needed to, and restore that calm in order to be wise in his learning. Tosfos in Gittin, because this list is also mentioned in Gittin, has a different fascinating reason that Yehuda was called Chacham L'Chasha Yirtzeh, as opposed to Rav Meir, who was called a Chacham. Evidently, Tosfos feels that Rav Meir was a Charif. Rav Meir was very, very sharp and very brilliant and scathing and penetrating logic. It's based on the Gemara that contrasts two Amoraim this way, but at least Tosfos feels that Rav Meir was a Charif and he was called the Chacham. If you hear there was a Mason Umasik, he was much more calm, level-headed, and he reached conclusions that Reb Meir maybe was incapable of reaching. I remember I had a Chavrusa once, many, many years, who was clearly, clearly more intellectually sharp and penetrating and creative than he could ever be. And my role in that Chavrusa for many years was to take these very, very radical, extremely creative ideas and boil them down to something a little bit more reasonable, take them back into the center of the conversation, because creativity sometimes becomes very extreme, very radical. And we have the ability to take it and moderate it and modulate it and make sure that it works with all the moving pieces that a sugya is, or in life, the moving pieces. And that, and evidently, Rabbi Meir was that, and Rabbi Yehuda was something different. Rabbi Meir was this incredibly once-in-a-generation intellect that can just penetrate any cryptic idea and just and condense it into a very clear-sounding logic in a very articulate fashion. But Meir was much more muscle, as we would say, much more moderate, much more leveled, and he came to a conclusion that Meir, or he helped Meir-type people come to conclusions that maybe they couldn't have come to otherwise, because the logic would have just been too breathtaking and too polar. So Meir was a chacham. Peter was a chacham l'chshiyusha, meaning the other times he didn't try to be a chacham, he tried to be a masik. He wasn't shooting for the home runs. He wasn't shooting for, we say, these grand ideas that completely revolutionized some idea, but it was taking ideas and distilling them and crystallizing them and making sure that there's a basis to them, and two different types of intellectual activity in general and certainly in Torah. These are very interesting lists because they remind us that we try, and sometimes we fail in our world. In our world, there's a real tendency towards the homogenization of Gedolim. You can go today, Rav Aaron was very disturbed by this, especially in the Haredi world, where every single Levaya and every single Hespet sounds the same. He was a Talmud Chacham, and he was a Baal Midos, and he was a Tzaddik, and he was a Baal Chesed, and he learned all two of them. Because there's a fear to concede or to acknowledge that there are people who have certain traits, not other traits. So you build these caricatures of people that are perfect, and ultimately, what you end up with is you don't understand anyone, because I was just, one of the guests at our table yesterday is very cute. He said, he ended the meal, one of the boys we had over, and he said, everything was delicious to my wife, especially, I think he said, the kugel or the rice or something. He said his father taught him that when you compliment the meal, you have to say something like that. You either say everything was delicious especially, or you say everything was delicious except, obviously the second one, you don't want to play too often. Because if you keep saying everything was delicious, these grand, encompassing praises have no meaning. Say to everyone, when you say everything was delicious, I especially enjoyed the kugel, the soup, or conversation was fantastic, I especially enjoyed that aspect. So the same thing with Hespedim. When you have Hespedim, because this is your last chance to extol the Gadol, because it's a learning moment, people are sometimes afraid to speak personally, and you end up with the goal to eulogize and to spread compliments to that person. You end up insulting that person because you don't really get to the core of who they were. So here you've got three different lists in which there's a willingness to contrast. In this case, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Huda. In the case we spoke about last week, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon. And people have different capacities. You can't expect everyone in the world to have every single trait in every single area of human experience. And you have to be willing to accept that people are limited because they invest their energies in certain areas and they can't always invest in all the other areas. And this is what you're starting to see from these lists. So next time we'll talk about another possible backhanded insult. He called Reb Shimon someone that learns but forgets. So is that meant to be a praise or a backhanded critique? He learns and he forgets. We'll see that next time. Have a great week, everyone. Of Chachma and of Maskanos.
Thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome. Have a good day, everyone.